Alan Kring Productions in association with Emergent Light Studio presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 5 for Autumn Semester 2019. Lecture 17, delivered on October 22nd.
Today, risk and return. Before we do that, a couple of matters. First of all, the markets for the day. Just to start off, was this a good day or a bad day, sir? It was a pretty bad day. The most important thing was, aside from the NASDAQ taking a pretty good hit, all of the markets were down, the major markets, except for the Russell, which was up just a little bit. The indices were showing weakness. And if we move over here and have a quick look at the bonds, the 10-year bond was down. In other words, the price of an index of bonds went lower, which means that the overall yield on those bonds went in the opposite direction. Price and yield are inversely related. I can guarantee you I'm going to ask you about that on future assessments like quizzes and the final. But we see that we had both equities. Investors on average were getting out of equities and using the money, which they typically would use to go to the next safer instrument, which is bonds, but they were bailing out of bonds too, rather significantly. And so here we go. There was where it was going. You can see that gold was up. Silver does its own thing, but there's no question that this was a second stage flight to quality. It wasn't anything major or massive. These numbers were not big, huge downs. They were enough to get our attention. And more importantly, there was a consistency across the board. Something spooked the markets in the mid-afternoon. Look at the Standard & Poor's 500. Do you see that it was kind of just bobbling and bouncing around? Boink, boink, ba-doink. And then all of a sudden, off a cliff it went. There was a bull rally here, but by the end, the bears had taken over again and slapped it back down. So clearly something spooked the market. I can't even tell you what that would have been. There might have just been one of those things where one computer started selling and the others, playing herd mentality, joined in on the sell fest. But I'm not sure. That doesn't look quite right. There was something that spooked them. You had this nice, strong bull rally starting, but that just lost its momentum real fast, and down we went on the cliff again. So, again, I got nothing. If you ask me what causes, I got nothing. But it was there, so no question about it. And also, of course, there we have that same volume quiet. The market was, volume today was only about half of what the average per day is over the last 52 weeks in trading on S&P stocks. So that looks like the heavies were off to the side, just adjusting portfolios, and this was activity of the lower tier of players still doing their buys and sells, just like I was today, getting out of bad things and trying to jump into new things that I think might be good. But overall, it didn't look like a very good day as far as volume goes. That quiet that has been stalking the markets for several months now is still there. So that's where we sit with our markets today. Before I go over to risk and return, I did want to show you some bond problems to get you to the point where you can just do them very quickly on a calculator. If you have your calculator, get it out. If you need to use a computer, this is when you can use it. Otherwise, you're not supposed to be having calculators out in class. But today, if you've got a VTI, Virtual Texas Instruments, bring your computer out so we can do these. Now, I'm just going to go through some practical problems just to get you to the point where you have this in your notes, and you can also do this without thinking too much about it. And to start this out, let me try do just some examples. And I'm going to show you some principles in here, so get the principles written down too. Okay, so start with a McDonald's, a Mickey D's bond. McDonald's, let's say a 3.125% 2042. So this is a season. This isn't new issue. This has been out there. Its term is 23 years. The term is how long the bond has left. And the term of this one is 23 years. Just make sure you remember to note that. Now, to start off with, we have the coupon right here. The coupon is what the company actually pays in interest per $1,000 of investment. It is going to be entered as a dollar amount. It's always put in as a dollar amount. In this case, in any case, you take 3.125% of the $1,000. Now, there are two other features a bond has: a price, and it has a yield. Now, the yield is what the market thinks it should pay. The coupon is what it actually does pay. The yield is what the market says it should pay. So sometimes the market says you should pay more than 3.125%. Sometimes the market says you should pay less, depending upon the economy, the risk of the company as time goes on, and all of that. Okay, that's fine. We're going to do the somewhat easier, unrealistic one first. Let's say that the market is in the mood for this bond to pay 3.00%. So in other words, McDonald's pays more than it should, which in other words means, should the price be above par value of $1,000 or below $1,000? The market says, you don't need to pay us that, 3.125. You should pay us 3.00. You're paying us too much. So would that make the market happy with McDonald's or angry at McDonald's? Happy, because McDonald's is giving free kids' meals. And they're not bad. I really wish they didn't go to those fruit cups and all that. But okay. So we should expect this bond to sell at a discount or a premium, which to par. You see, I'm happy with this. Investors are happy. They're going to go and buy a lot of this because it's paying too much. So if they buy a lot of it, will that push the price up or down?
Up.
Yes. So again, should this bond sell at a premium or a discount to
$1,000? Premium.
Good. Second try. I was going to give you three, and then your major's finance, right? Oh, okay, that's right. I remember you, yeah. I'll cut you some slack. You're going to be slave to a computer, a mainframe, for a long time. Okay, watch. Okay, now turn this machine on, this computer on, and now we're going to go apps, finance, TVM solver. Now, realistically, your coupons come twice a year. The first problems in your homework will say, just make it simple once a year. We'll just do it the real way, twice a year. So, the term of this bond, it has what? 23 years left on it. So N is 23 times 2, because you're going to get the payments twice each year. Now, I percent, the yield is always the I percent. That's what goes in the yield. Either you know it and you put it in there, or you don't know it, and that's where you do alpha solve. But in this case, we do know it. It's 3%, but don't forget that this is divided into two calculations a year. They pay two payments a year. So you divide by two. Go down. Don't hit enter, just go down. Now, what we need to do here in this case is we don't know the price. So we're going to leave that alone. Don't change it. Don't delete the zero. Or if there's a number there, don't delete that number. Okay, now the payments. Watch, I'm going to put in the coupon, 0.03125 times the 1,000, because that coupon is quoted as a percent of the face value, which is always 1,000. And because that coupon is going to be paid in two installments, we would divide by two. Always by two. Down. Now, future value. Face value. This is how much the bond will pay back, which is $1,000. That always, in a bond calculation, it will always be $1,000 in the FV slot. Now you go 1-1 and make sure it's on end because your coupons come at the end of each six-month period. Now we got everything in place, and now we put the cursor back on the price value. And let's see if it is actually selling at a premium to par. Alpha, solve. Sure enough, this doesn't prove that we're right, but it's on the right side of 1,000. So that means that, well, it's probably, we're at least close. So it's $1,020.66. $1,020.66. That's the price. The quote would be $102.07. No dollar sign because it's not money. It's just a quote. Watch out for what I ask you. If I say quote the bond, that means you give me the second number, a tenth of the price. Just be careful about that. Almost always, if you look at financial tickers, newspapers, you will see the quote, not the price. So this bond is quoting at 102.06. We just say the quote is 102.06. It is indeed selling at a premium to par. About a $20.66 premium to par. So there we go. That is how I would find a price. Now, before I go on, this is as of now in the year 2019. Now I'm going to take you forward in time. Thinking here, who should I do this with? You, sir. We are now in the future. I see you one day on the street. Let's say it's the year 2035. You have aged substantially. You're still good looking, you know, more receding hairline, and little could use a few pounds off, but I mean, you're doing good. And you say, I am still holding that bond that you recommended from Mickey D's. I said, I didn't recommend anything. Don't believe me as an investor. But I bought it anyway, Professor. Okay, so we're in the year 2035. The same bond. Now, curiously, oddly enough, the bond, the yield on the bond is 3.00%. Now, it probably has been all over the place. Markets are very fickle. They'll say, well, 3.00% today, maybe next month, 2.9, maybe in a year. 3.5, it'll be swinging all over the place. But let's just say in 2035, the coupon yield spread is identical. Let's see what happens to the price of the bond. Let's see if the bond's price is the same after all the, when the term is much closer. Now, in this case, the term is 7 years, 2035 to 2042. So it'd be 7 times 2. Now, everything else is the same because the yield is the same. The coupons say everything is the same. So let's see what happened to the price. We'll go down to price value, alpha, solve. Oh, it's closer to par now. It's at only 1,784. 1,784. We're quoting, that would be a quote of 178 change. This is an important principle. What's going on here is that as bonds get closer to maturity, their price gets closer to par. It's just a mathematical thing because the spread between yield and coupon doesn't have as much effect. You see, with 26 years, that spread has a major impact on a lot of cash flow on the bond. But in only 7 years, no, it's not really going to have that much impact. As the bond approaches maturity, its price is going to close in on par. Because a couple of days before the bond matures, you know in 2 days you're going to get your $1,000. So it doesn't matter what the yield and coupon are saying. You're going to get your grand. Now, let me take it the other way. Let me do a CVS. A CVS 3.60% 2033. And let's say that the market says the yield should be 3.85%. The market says it should be 3.85. The bond actually pays 3.60. So this time the market says it should pay more than it actually pays, which means that this bond, when I find its price, it should be at, sir, a discount because this bond is disappointing the market. You see that? And so investors are going to sell it because you're supposed to pay us 3.85 and all you pay us is 3.60, sell. That selling pressure will cause the supply of the bonds to increase in the open market, sinking their price. So what we're going to run here is we're just going to run it, see what happens. Okay, now, in this case, the term remaining is 14 years times 2 payments per year. Now, the market says it should be 3.85. So I'm going to divide by 2 to recognize it'll compound twice a year. So it'll be half year. Now we go get past, what will you get off me? So divided by 2. I see, I didn't put that in there. Okay, so now the payments here, 3.6, oh, got to use decimal. 0.0360 times 1,000 divided by 2. Notice that the coupon is always the dollar amount, and you get it times, you put in the decimal, times 1,000 divided by 2. Everything else is fine. So now I go up to the price value, and I say alpha solve. Sure enough, it's selling at a discount to par. 973.14 is the price. 978-14, which is a quote of 97-81. Now, same trick. Let's get out here to, let's say, this is in 2019, when the term is 34 years. Now let's come out to 2029. Same bond. And we're going to say that it has the same yield as it did before. Kind of weird that it would, but this is just to make a point here. Let's see what happens to the price. The only difference here is that we're closer to the time of maturity. So in this case, at 2029, it has only 4 years times two periods per year. And going down to the price value, well, I'll be darned, it will be closer to par. Look at that. It's still at a discount to par, but because there's so little time left, the impact of the spread between yield and coupon has less effect. 990.81 is the price. 990.81, which is a quote of 99.8 on the bond. Again, this is this odd thing, that as the term approaches zero, and this is $1,000, the face value, if it's selling at a premium to par, it'll come down on par. If it's selling at a discount to par, it'll come up on par. It's just the mathematics of it. Now, the only time that wouldn't happen is if the bond were going to default. Then it would be it would head for wherever the market thought the bondholders were going to get back. So, for example, with a Sears bond, they are aiming at something where the bondholders say, well, this is about what we're going to get as far as pennies on the dollar go in liquidation. Now, some of them have a really steep climb. A bond that is high yield, in other words, like a junk bond, they can have that thing come like this. They'll probably still pay. A good example would be JCPenney. But it's just going to come up really, it's selling at a heavy discount to par, but it's heading toward $1,000 because there is almost a pretty good certainty JCPenney is going to survive now. Do not take that as investment advice. It might very well still go Tap City, but there's a really good chance that it will survive and pay the $1,000 off at the maturity. So there you go. On an exam, you need to know this. As the term approaches zero, the bond approaches par, regardless of the spread between coupon and yield. Regardless. Because at maturity, it's going to pay its par, $1,000. Unless it's in trouble. And we hope that won't be the case too often. But, I mean, let me show you one other thing here. You've got to be careful when you invest in bonds. Because some bonds have some covenants in them that could affect the risk of the bond. There is one covenant, it's called callability. A callable bond gives the company the right, not the obligation, but the right to pay off the bond early. So, for example, if that McDonald's bond was callable, it would have a little C on it. You've got to be careful about that. It would mean that if interest rates went down in the economy, McDonald's could pay that bond off early and refi at a lower coupon. That would piss off the investors because, you see, the investors are expecting to get this coupon clear out to 2042. But if McDonald's has a call provision in the bond, McDonald's could reissue new paper at, let's say, 2.8% and use that to pay off this higher-priced paper. And the bonds holders who thought they were going to get 3.125% would get their money back and they could invest it at only 2.9%. So the callability provision is adverse to the investors, to the lenders. Now, there's something called... Now, the way it would look at something like this, that McDonald's bond would have something that said callable 2028. In other words, when we got to 2028, McDonald's could refi the bond at any time. It can't up to that point. It's very much like mortgages. You can refi a mortgage, but you just get punished like hell if you do it too early, too quickly. And here's what that means. See this bond right here I just did? What I found was called the yield to maturity. What I was using was the yield to maturity. But there's also something called yield to call. We'll find that out in just a minute. All you do is change the N to the call year instead of the maturity year. But now, let me go on here. Okay. Real markets don't use yields. They use prices to convey information. So in the real world, you would not see, here's the yield, now calculate the price. We bid and ask, we open cry, we do open cry, or we do quiet electronic or a little piece of paper in prices, not in interest rates. So what you really see happen in a market, you would see something like this. You would see JNC 5.25% 2035 quoting at 103.58. That's what you would really see, is a price or a quote. Because that's what we call prices. You back into the yield. It's not hard to do, but for God's sake, you make sure that you follow my instructions on this, because this is where you trip up. We need to find the yield to maturity, the YTM. It's not hard to do. Just watch one thing here. Okay, so now we're going to put in the 2035 from that's 15, 16 years. 16 times 2, the I percent, we don't know. So we're going to have to calculate that. This time we've got the price. The price, and don't forget to put in a negative for the price value, is going to be 1035.80. 1035.80. Now, do you see that this bond is selling at a premium to par? It's selling at a premium. That means that the yield is going to be above that coupon. Well, what's the coupon? The coupon is 0.0525 times 1,000 divided by 2. Notice that times 1,000 divided by 2. Just do that if it's semi-annual payments, divided by 1 if it's annual payments. Everything else looks good. So now we go back up to I percent because we're calculating the yield to maturity now. Alpha solve. This is where you have to watch yourself. You gave it semi-annual payments, so it gives you back a semi-annual interest. You need to just run over with the cursor to the end of that 2.462023385 and say times 2. Don't hit enter, just drop it down. Your answer is 4.92%. The yield to maturity is 4.92%. Sure enough, the market says you should pay only 4.92%. Since JNC 2035s pay 5.25%, the market's going to reward them. Bond investors are going to buy right into this thing. They're going to charge right at it because it's offering more than the market needs it to. I know I've got something right because if it's selling at a premium, the yield should be more than what the coupon actually is. So, okay, yield should be less than what the coupon is, I should say. Okay, that's all there is to it. Now I'm going to do another one just to reinforce this. And again, that same, watch this real quick, watch this. Well, no, let me just do another one here. Jan, let's do CNL 4.55% 2027s are quoting at 97.88. So in this case, the bond is selling at a discount to par. That means that investors don't like this bond. That means the coupon is insufficient. So we should calculate and get a yield higher than the coupon. So we go up here, the N. Would be, in this case, 8 years, 8 times 2. Leave the yield alone. Don't play with it. Don't delete it or anything. Now, the price value. Always PV is a negative. In this case, it's 978.80. Remember, you put in prices, you get out prices. That's obviously a quote. There's no question that's a quote. Now, the payments. The coupon is 0.0455. Times 1,000 divided by 2. You see how it's just a routine? Just get the routine down. It's like automatic. Don't think about it. Just get it down. That would be something to write on your note card for the final. It's just the sequence of steps, the parts that are routine. Now we're going to go up here to the I percent and do the alpha solve. What we should get is something, a yield to maturity, that is more than what the coupon actually is. Alpha, solve. Now again, don't make this mistake. I will put in the multiple choice answers 2.44%, just to see if you forget that you're supposed to multiply it by 2. I'm telegraphing my punch. Don't let me hit you in the nose. 4.87%, sure enough. There you go. It was the yield. The market said it should have been more. That doesn't prove that I got it right, but it's a pretty good indication that I got it right. One last thing. Let me do the CNL bond. Let's suppose it has a call provision. Callable in 2024. In other words, when it gets to be 2024, this company could simply say, we're paying these off now. Interest rates have gone down, so we can pay a lower coupon. So here's your money back, investors. What we do here, we will calculate the yield to call, the yield to maturity, but we'll also calculate the yield to call. In other words, we will say, what's the yield if the bond closes off, not in 2027, but in 2024? So in that case, that would be only 5 years out, times two. Everything else is the same. I mean, the coupons are the same up to the point where it gets called. So now we'll go down and see what the I percent is. Okay, alpha, solve. And again, don't forget to run over there and say times two. 5.03%. So the yield to call is higher. Like that. If you can get this down, what I've done here, and just do it. I mean, you can do it over and over. You've got easily three, possibly more questions on the final done in like a minute. If you're comfortable with just keying it into your calculator and getting your answers to spit out, that's all there is to it. That ends the, I mean, there's a lot more you can talk about bonds. I mean, bonds are a huge part of the financial markets. They are very popular because they are relatively less risky. They are a fixed income instrument. In other words, you put your investment in, and then you just get these coupons for 10, 15, 20, 30 years, whatever. And then you get your $1,000 back at the end that you can reinvest in something else. So that's why they have a huge fan club. As I said, the bond market is 10 times the size of the stock market. But it is not what you hear all of these investment gurus and news, financial news programs talk about, because there's no sex appeal in it. The bonds just kind of float up and down. They're very quiet for the most part. They can get a little bit frisky sometimes, and I'll show you that in the next lecture. But for the most part, they are very peaceful instruments for fixed income. And also, if you are responsible for maintaining value in a portfolio, then bonds are probably going to be your go-to instrument, especially high-grade, AAA, AAA bonds. Because then you're not going to have, like, say, a retirement fund go into the dirt. What the hell? Really? Okay. Now, the next topic on the agenda is risk and return. And this is the core of finance, risk. And I begin this with a very, very simple example, just to get us moving along here. Madam, I have here a dollar bill. Now, there is... up on the fourth floor, there's a way to get to the top, like a fifth story, and you can get out on this gable, and I will give you a dollar if you'll jump off there.
Okay.
You will?
Yeah.
Okay, let's go. We're going up to the fifth floor. You do realize you're jumping off the fifth floor. You do realize you won't bounce.
Yeah.
Your only hope is if there's a squirrel underneath you. What the heck was that all about? Most people, most sane people, would not take this opportunity of a lifetime to make a buck. This guy is saying, oh, hell no. You see, because this is dangerous. Say that again?
More student debt.
Seriously? I mean, they pay it off? No, they don't. Actually, they just come and take organs from you. You know? They would.
Yeah, but you don't have to worry about it anymore.
Well, you do. How are you supposed to come back as a zombie if you don't have your kidneys? I can't pee. Okay? Anyway, you see, most people will want more money for taking more risk. Sir, why are you here? You know, when I was a kid, I was 11 years old. One night I was so full of angst, I crawled out on this window ledge outside of my second story of my home, and I just sat there and I yelled out in the middle of the night, "Why am I here?" This guy down the street, he leans out his window and says, "Because you climbed out there, you moron!" And then this dog started barking, and I realized I do not like existentialism. You're spending $100,000. You're wasting 4 years of your life. I can't guarantee you you're going to get a job. You could end up being the assistant manager at a Jiffy Lube on the south side of Memphis. The only way you can make ends meet is to do kids' parties dressed as Elvis on the weekends. And that didn't work out for you when the Elvis costume tore and the police were called. Pervert. Okay? See, the thing, though, is that you're taking a risk because you expect. You wouldn't be here in college if you knew you were going to still make minimum wage. You're not in my class because you love yourself some finance, and you just are so in awe of my godlike teaching talents. The hell you think that? You are here because you have to be, and you don't even know if this is going to make you more money. That's risk. Now, sir, what is risk? You don't know. Well, you would know it if it was coming at you. You know, an asteroid coming down, God darn, that's a lot of risk. Well, you know, butter my biscuits and call me Mr. Delicious. Okay. Here's the thing. Risk is how many possible outcomes can occur. Risk is the number of possible outcomes. You see, let me show you something. Madam, this is a quarter. Now, you pay me 50 cents, and if this coin comes up heads or tails, I pay you a dollar. Will you take that bet? You pay me 50 cents, and whether it comes up heads or comes up tails, you get a dollar. Well, you know what? You are being difficult today. I am so tired of, okay. You see, there's no risk in this because there's only one possible outcome, a dollar. So this is a riskless bet. That's an important consideration. As a matter of fact, it's weird because I teach this high-level course in derivatives. And the first couple of classes, the students who have not been my students in the past, I'm showing them how you can create a portfolio that has the same value regardless of what happens in the markets. It's called a hedge portfolio. But the problem is that they don't make that locked assumption, realization. It's riskless. It's a perfectly safe portfolio because it doesn't matter what happens to the economy. You get the same amount of money at the end. So that's why I emphasize this a lot, is this idea that the number of outcomes is one of the most important determinants of risk. The more possible outcomes there are, the more risk there is, generally speaking. What? No, I'm not. Certainly not. Okay, so but that's not all that drives risk. That's not the only thing that drives risk. other important considerations have to be taken in. So in order to do that, I have to give you some demonstrations. The first one. Yeah. Come on, guys. Come on. Yeah, all of you. Showtime. Come on. Come on. Hi. Come here. Come here. Come on. Okay. Got them. These are part of the demonstration.
Oh, you two quit it. Roar.
Okay. Now. Don't push his butt. Okay. Okay. Now, madam, what are those? Little mini dragons. Lots of mini dragons. This is Jezebel. This one is Byron. Where's Ethel? Oh, there's Ethel. Okay. Okay, these are mini dragons. Okay. Here now. Okay, guys. Showtime. Okay, ready? Let's go! Attack! Ah! You were just attacked by many, many dragons. Frequency. Were you injured?
Yes.
No, you weren't. Don't make their feelings. They know they can't hurt you. There was nothing there. Many, many little mini dragons attacked you. And nothing happened to you. Now, however, a giant dragon straight out of Game of Thrones. Whoa, wait. No. Fire-breathing dragon. Ow! Oh, my beard. Okay. Wait. Oh, my beard. Oh, God. Severity. Ugh. Do you understand the difference?
Uh-huh.
Risk. Mini dragons back in there.
Okay.
Come on, guys. Good job. Yes, we'll go out for Chick-fil-A tonight. I know dragons like to eat chicken. Grilled chicken. Okay. Frequency versus severity. Frequency versus severity. You see, because some risks happen quite often, some exposures, some outcomes, but they are trivial outcomes that don't really do anything. But there are some that happen maybe once in a lifetime, maybe once in many lifetimes, and they are absolute destructive things, like an asteroid, an earthquake, something like that, a once-in-a-lifetime cold snap that comes across the country or a drought that happens once in 10 generations. So their frequency is low, but their severity is high. So that is one of the driving factors in risk. Now, another one that is very important, and for this one, I'm going to need two volunteers. Sir, would you care to volunteer for me? Good. Madam, I need you to volunteer for me. You are going to be the commander, and you are going to be my executioner. You are actually going to execute me here. Come down. Okay, come on over here, sir. You're going to give the command to execute me. You are going to shoot me in the chest with this. Okay. Now, you have to hold it down and get it all to the front, okay? Now, in order for me to do this, I'm actually going to blindfold myself because I don't want to see myself executed.
Okay.
Okay? So. In the first class, some guy, I took my tie off and some guy whistled. I just felt so wrong. You know, I couldn't even bring myself to say, call me. Okay, now, stand over here.
Stand over here?
Yes. This is time. Stand close to me, and then you shoot me.
Okay.
In the first class, she shot me in the face. I want you to shoot me here. Now, you give the order. Now you got to hang it down so that it gets all the stuff to the front.
Okay.
And then you got to give it a good honk, okay?
Okay.
Okay, sir, give the order.
I'll fire.
Fire. Oh.
Blast. Oh, stand. No, now.
Okay.
You're going to do it again.
Oh.
Much farther away. Farther. That way. Yeah, right there. Okay? Now, sir. Now, you got to honk it, hang it down, then honk it really good. Fire. You tell him to fire.
Tell him to fire.
No, you tell her to fire. I can't see. I can't think. What do you notice about the blast pattern? First one was here. What do you see this time? Sir?
It's over a larger area.
Yes. Because there was more distance, in other words, time. That's a physics principle. As you give it more time, there's more possible outcomes that can occur. So the second, and I thank you for your time, the second principle that drives risk. Really? Oh, now that was good. I just put it on my face. Time. Is a second factor. I'm putting my tie back on. At least I can have some dignity. There. Much better. Time is a second factor that is important in the consideration of risk. As time increases, more possible outcomes can happen. This is actually a physics principle, as I said. It comes, and there's actually mathematical equations called gas diffusion equations. As you introduce a gas into another gas or a liquid into another liquid, you will see that as more time goes on, it spreads out and can cause more havoc, if you will, or has more chance to have an effect that is positive or negative. Now, what else would be involved in this? There are other factors, but one of the most important factors, seriously, let me ask this. Sir, have you ever been in combat? I'm not talking about Call of Duty. I'm talking about the real thing. Okay, now, you're going to have a very high chance of dying. Your chance of dying is going to be very high on your first one. Especially because I'm going to be there to use you as my bullet sponge. Okay? But you see, as time goes on, you will gain more experience and you will be less likely to do something that could get you killed or injured. There's an old saying, beware of the old man in a business where men die young. And that's quite the case. You see, one of the important factors in risk is experience. The more experience, the more possible outcomes you are aware of that could happen. You get fewer chances. You have fewer opportunities to say, well, I never saw that coming, because you've seen more that could happen as time goes on. The benefit of that is that you can avoid, you know your risk level. What you might not know is what would go over your risk preference level when you don't have much experience. As you have more experience, you know darn well what could go over your risk level. You know more about it. Now, related but not exactly the same is information. Information is huge in controlling risk, because literally much risk is ignorance. We just don't know. We don't know all of the factors. Okay, can we find these factors? Sometimes the answer is no. We can't know that. Interestingly enough, sometimes the answer is yes, we can find that out. However, it is so expensive that to find out that it is actually less costly to take the risk without the information. That happens a lot. Actually, in finance, in gambling, there are ways, for example, at a 21 table, you can really move the odds in your favor. But in order to be able to do that, it takes a long time to learn it. You have to learn some math to do it. It's easier for people to just go to the table and play their 21. Who haven't I annoyed lately? You, sir. You know I run a ghost hunting club here, okay? So, you're one of my team members, and we go to a house, and I say, we're going to investigate this house. And you say, well, what do we know about this house? And I say, I got nothing. I don't know anything about it. Do you see that that is a much riskier situation than if I said, well, there's a demon in there? Because if you knew there was a demon in there, you'd avoid the thing with the horns. But if you don't know there's a demon in there, you might think you were going in and they were having a Viking party. Even though he's talking about eating your dog's hind leg. That was a weird example. Okay. Get off me. I'm working hard here. I can't see anything because there's powder in my eyes. Okay. Now, there are three different kind of approaches to risk in companies and in investing and in your lives. You can avoid the risk entirely. Just say, oh, hell no, not going to do it. Nope. That's what you could say when I take you to that house. Nope, don't know, not going to go, not going to try. And then there is the one, you could bear the risk. In other words, just take it. Just take the whole thing. Yep, going to go in there, know nothing, and you walk in there and you're possessed by a demon and you're slobbering, things like that. And then there's a middle ground. There's a middle ground where we mitigate risk. This is what we do in our lives to a certain extent. And it's absolutely crucial when in finance. We don't run away from risk. We don't go in, like these traders who blow crack and then they go into the trading. We say, all right, there are some risks that we can get rid of or at least reduce quite a bit. In most corporations, that is a big thing. Risk management, risk control. Okay, yes, we have to use electricity, but we don't have to have that plug-in that's cracked and wires are hanging out of it. Yes, we do want to take risk in investments, but we don't have to just do it stupidly. We can get rid of most of the risk in any securities price volatility by doing something very simple. Most people don't even do this. They just plow in and bear the risk. Why? Because they don't know enough to know that they're stupid asses. The same is true in a lot of things, is that if you don't take any risks, where do you expect to get a reward? Because you're pretty? You see, we have to have risk if we want an expected return. You're here because you want to make $50,000, $60,000 a year and by the time you're 22, 23. So if you wanted to avoid it, just finish high school and go get a job. But you want to have the risk because that's where you get the expected return. But you don't have to take all of the risks in the world. Guess what? In college, you can do a couple of things to avoid those risks. You can join RSOs. You can do internships. You can do all those things that we bitch at you about because we know that those actually mitigate risk. They make it more likely that you will get a decent, high-paying job. And if that doesn't work out, you can always fall back at least on the fact that you have information which can allow you to seek better prospects down the road. So put all of this together, and we begin to see that risk has contours and shape to it. The big thing is, how much do you really want to take risk, and how much do you want to spend the time to mitigate? That this and everything that I'm going to do from here on, most of the course, has to do with that simple part of risk management where we say, don't avoid risk. You're going to have a very boring life. And don't bear all the risk in the world because you're going to have a very short life. Somewhere in the middle here, you have at least a good chance of having a great life. That's all I have for you tonight. I thank you.